Now the Three Martini Lunch with Greg Corumbus and Jim Garrity.
And welcome one and all to the Friday edition of the Three Martini Lunch along with Jim Garrity of National Review Online. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. And Jim, you can kind of get a gauge on a two-hour-long Republican presidential debate when our good martini has nothing to do with it. So.
Revealing, yeah.
Just a little bit. But it does, once again, harken back to the fact that this is perhaps one of the worst weeks for President Obama. And that's saying quite a bit, given where the economy is right now, where his poll numbers are. But with the president getting, you know, negative reviews from the IRS and Bill Clinton on his tax policy. Yesterday he was in Cincinnati and making references to the Intercontinental Railroad instead of the Transcontinental Railroad. Now, of course, one of his pet projects, Solyndra, has been in the news, a growing scandal. Two of his former staffers, David Axelrod and Rahm Emanuel, are playing the role of Sergeant Schultz and saying, "We knew nothing. Nothing about what was going on with the money of $535 million of taxpayer money." And also not speaking out now are the executives of Solyndra testifying before the investigating subcommittee of the House Energy Committee. All the bigwigs taking the fifth today, Jim, which means clearly they have nothing to hide. And the president will never have to worry about this issue.
You know, I think I love the way Jake Tapper summarized it, which was, "Dear America, thanks for the $500 million in taxpayer dollars. No, we're not going to answer any questions. Thanks, bye." From Solyndra executives. I think they're one of the things that makes this something that you and I can kind of rub our hands with glee over is that, you know, from the very beginning, Obama team, nothing to see here. This is, you know, routine. Companies go out of business all the time. This is, we knew, you know, as you said, we knew nothing. This is, well, when you see a company that's got an enormous amount of taxpayer dollars, and the more people look at the figures for this company, the taxpayer dollars were what was keeping it going. Like this, you know, you could really argue that their primary, like when they were set up, their primary source of revenue was going to be bilking the federal government by whispering sweet nothings about green jobs into their ears. In every great scandal, you think of Iran-Contra, you think of all these things, seeing a bunch of high-powered people plead the fifth always is like catnip to reporters. It just kind of says, you know what, here you go, something's going on here. If this was all on the up and up and a series of honest mistakes, they'd have no problem answering these questions. I am kind of struck that of all the people who are complaining about the way the GOP is handling this hearing, Henry Waxman is complaining that Republicans are badgering the witnesses. We all know how Waxman was kind and gentle when he chaired various committees during the Bush years, right, Greg?
Absolutely.
I would also note, and people may think this is a bit harsh in my assessment, but I believe this is the first time we have heard of complaint of badgering from a congressman who resembles an actual badger. I know, we're supposed to be above making fun of people's appearances, but if I'm Solyndra, I don't want Henry Waxman being the guy riding to my rescue and saying, take it easy on these people. And it says something about Waxman in his district that he can say, oh, take it easy on the executives. What did they ever do to you? You know, that could be his approach to this. So I think this story will not go away anytime soon. I think it kind of indicates that this is what we've all kind of feared about the whole green jobs and Obama stimulus phenomenon, that we basically deep down, we know it hasn't worked on the scale that Obama promised and all of the optimists expected. Perhaps the more interesting thing is how much of it went to line the pockets of donors. And that's kind of the worst case scenario here, is that the stimulus was essentially that at least tucked into the stimulus was a large scale effort to effectively pay back Obama donors with taxpayer dollars. Democrats will object to that narrative, but seeing a bunch of executives, you know, say, "Oh, I can't talk about it. If I answer questions, I'll incriminate myself." Well, that certainly makes people think that this was dirty business from the start. So, good fun. Hopefully, there'll be more. To use a famous phrase from Washington, hopefully, this ends with lots of folks getting frog marched in handcuffs. If you'll
the Joe Wilson. And not the Congressman Joe Wilson line. Apparently, the Waxman rule is we hate corporate America unless it's one we like. That's the new rule.
Except for these guys. Except the guys who take lots and lots of taxpayer money. Then they're the good guys and take it easy on them.
Yeah, I don't remember Democrats ever being tough on like Alberto Gonzalez when he kept saying he didn't recall various things. It's very, very consistent on their part. Anyway,
it's just like Enron. You know, take it easy on them. Nothing to see here. No ties to the president.
Right. On to martini number two now. And now we do head to last night's Fox News Google presidential debate with nine folks on stage. We'll talk a little bit more about the numbers in just a moment. But it was not a good night in a lot of different ways. Jim had a post on how Rick Santorum on the Don't Ask, Don't Tell question forgot or failed or didn't want to thank the soldier for his service. But the big loser in a lot of minds last night was Rick Perry, the front runner. Obviously, we'll see in the polls, and especially the polls in the key states, whether that happened. But one of the key issues that is now dogging him is the issue of immigration. And when he first got the question, he started out in a way that I think most conservatives would find pretty strong.
We put $400 million of our taxpayer money into securing that border. We've got our Texas Ranger recon teams there now. I supported Arizona's immigration law by joining in that lawsuit to defend it.
Now, when Perry actually finally got around to answering Chris Wallace's question on immigration, the conservative reaction, not so good.
But if you say that we should not educate children who have come into our state for no other reason than they've been brought there by no fault of their own, I don't think you have a heart.
Jim, I don't know. I didn't watch the Frank Luntz focus group, but I would imagine the little blue and red lines went into the tank at that point in his Republican focus group if they had that. It reminds me of what I think is one of the low points of the Bush administration when he said the conservatives who didn't like his quote-unquote comprehensive approach didn't want what was best for America. It was really kind of a smarmy, arrogant way to look at the problem. And I thought one of the best moments of the night came from Mitt Romney when he followed that up by pointing out that legal residents who want to send their children to state schools in Texas who don't live in Texas have to pay $100,000 more over 4 years right now than an illegal who currently lives in Texas. This is clearly an albatross around Perry's neck, and he doesn't seem to be the least bit worried about it.
And what's fascinating is, even though I think I disagree with it, you probably could make a cost-benefit analysis type discussion here, or you know, Perry's argument that these children are here, I don't want to blame the kids for the sins of their parents. Like he's fine with a chunk of that answer until he goes after the motives, or really you could say the character or soul of the critics, and it just is this seething disdain and dismissiveness. You hear that, and Greg, I don't know about you. I'm like, you know, if I wanted to hear this, I'd watch a Democratic debate.
Right.
You know, I mean, this is what, you know, the traditional Democratic line is, that we're all cruel and harsh and we hate kids, et cetera, et cetera. The other thing is the idea of, you know, being called heartless by Rick Perry is kind of like being called weird by Michael Jackson. His whole brand is based on him being the tough guy who makes the tough decisions and who isn't afraid of public criticism, i.e. Gardasil. So the idea that he's going to run around accusing other people of having other conservatives of having insufficient compassion is striking and baffling. And it was, you know, you mentioned the Luntz focus group. Luntz said the most negative response, not just of this debate, not just of this debates this cycle, it's the lowest response that he's gotten from any Republican candidate in any debate since he's been doing these focus groups. I mean, the focus group just loathed it, and I think with good reason, because basically their character was being attacked by Rick Perry. And it was kind of fascinating was how he didn't seem to get it. And let's not forget, in the previous one, he said something like, this shouldn't come down to what, you know, how your name is pronounced, which certainly suggests that this is driven by xenophobia. You know, if every illegal immigrant coming to the country had the name John Smith, we would have the exact same issue here. So I think it's just kind of a crutch that he likes to rely on. And I understand that there are folks on the right who always enjoy accusing their critics of racism and kind of turning the tables of this, you know, frustrating traditional narrative. But Perry does himself no favors. And I think if he ends up botching his lead and ends up blowing the nomination, we may look at this and say, this is when it happened. This is when it really fell apart for him, that a lot of people who wanted to like him stopped liking him.
Yeah, it could very well be. He seems maybe he's just positioning himself. He thinks that'll help him with Hispanic voters if he wins the nomination. It's really hard to understand his strategy there. But it's worth pointing out that, you know, the moment where campaigns start to tank, it was the Tim Russert question about driver's licenses for illegals stumped Hillary Clinton a few months before the real voting started, and she never really recovered from the down spiraling that happened after that. So we'll have to see. But yesterday, Jim, we were talking about how Gary Johnson was the ninth person on the stage. He was there, had a decent line about his neighbor's dogs. But the one that we lamented yesterday that would not be on the stage was Thaddeus McCotter. And apparently we were not lamenting it as much as he was, because he announced yesterday afternoon that he's dropping out of the race. That's not the crazy part. The crazy part is, as you pointed out in Twitter and some other places, is that in June of 2011, I should point out, he said that Mitt Romney and President Obama are not rivals, they're running mates. So, of course, when Thaddeus McCotter dropped out and announced he was running for re-election of the House, he endorsed Mitt Romney for the Republican presidential nomination. I thought the Tim Pawlenty endorsement was odd. This one's really odd.
If you thought John Kerry was a flip-flopper, you know, or you know, any one of these other famous cases of I voted for it before I voted against it. And you know, people who listened yesterday will know I'm a big fan of Thad McCotter.
Right.
I hate to think that our discussion yesterday was what killed his presidential campaign. He's like, well, gee whiz, if the best I'm getting is some commentary on three martini lunch, that's it. It's never going to get any better. I've peaked. I've jumped the shark. It's over. That's my Thaddeus McCotter impression.
Very nice.
You know, nobody can tell whether that's a good impression or a bad impression because no one's heard Thaddeus McCotter speak in any of these debates. But to see him come out and, like, for a while, I thought the whole reason McCotter was running was that he really didn't like Mitt Romney and he didn't want to see Romney win the nomination. And then, boom, all of a sudden he's, you know, saying, you know, there's an indication I'm probably going to endorse Romney. The only really plausible explanation, look, McCotter is running for re-election in his House district. It's in Michigan. Romney won Michigan last time around. His father used to be governor there. This may be something to do with McCotter's long-term political health in Michigan political circles. Having said that, the about face is kind of striking, and I would say kind of, you know, sullies the good name of Thaddeus McCotter a little bit. A little disappointing. Not so much out of anti-Romney animus, just seeing a guy, you know, so dramatically change his perspective on somebody so quickly. Boy, when he issues that endorsement, he'd better have some fascinating justification for it.
Yeah, no kidding. Well, the way this is escalating, if Rick Perry doesn't win the nomination and ends up dropping out, he's going to have a really, really, really good endorsement of Mitt Romney by the time this is going out after Pawlenty and McCotter. So we'll see.
I want to salute the consistent Mitt Romney. His
right.
Fantastic record in opposing Obamacare.
Well, that would be less creepy than his suggestion of mating Newt Gingrich and Herman Cain last night. So,
yeah, you recognize that this was a guy who was an animal husbandry. He majored in at Texas A&M. That was just strange. And it was just an example of just not a good night for Governor Perry.
Yeah, that was just the icing on a really bad cake. Jim, have a great weekend. We'll talk to you Monday.
Looking forward to it, Greg.
Jim Garrity of NationalReview.com. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Please join us Monday for the next 3 Martini Lunch.